Hello, testing, 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 testing.
صلوا على محمد وعلى محمد. بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. Thank you for your patience. Thank you. Okay. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. So let's begin with a hadith for inspiration from Rasulullah sallallahu alayhi wa sallam. The translation is that there is no swallow more beloved to Allah, the Exalted, than the swallow of rage that one controls, and the swallow of self-restraint in the face of trial. And there is no drop more beloved to Allah, the Exalted, than the drop of a tear shed out of the fear and reverence of Allah, and that, or the drop of blood that has spilled in the way of Allah. This is a beautiful hadith, and from one perspective, these four acts, like the swallowing at the time of rage, the swallowing of self-restraint, the tear of fear, and the tear, or let's say a drop of blood, or let's say the equivalent when it comes to one's striving and struggle. Those are four things that the dunya and being attached to the dunya, being attached to worldly life, it encourages us to like really move away from these, and it diminishes their importance, or even says that these are not like valuable traits to have. The worldly life says that okay, you don't have to control yourself. Be who you are, right? Worldly life says that don't put yourself don't ever get inconvenienced. Just escape from all sorts of trial. Worldly life says that. Don't experience fear. Like, there's no need to be fearful of anything. Just be in a state of always enjoyment. Always be happy and never feel like grieved. The worldly life also might say that, why would you want to go through suffering, or let's say go through harm for something like let's say you want to defend truth or justice, or you want to struggle in that regard. But these are four things which have value and are prominent, like from the perspective of Tawheed and in the vocabulary of the Ahlul Bayt alayhim as-salam. Okay, so this is our timeline. Inshallah, we're hoping that with a time change and next week, inshallah, people will all be able to get here a little bit earlier, and the tech thing will be figured out, inshallah. The class is taking place every Tuesday night, inshallah, until December 13th, and that'll be the 8th class at that time. There is a weekly homework that's assigned. This last one, I assigned it on, I think, Sunday, and it's due next Sunday. So you have a week to work on the homework. The homework is optional, meaning that if you're attending the class, you can attend just by, you can just be attending. But if you want to, be, really a student in the class, then, which is preferable, then you can sign up for the class. It's free, and you can do the homework as well. And then you get, one of the benefits of that is you get feedback on the homework, and also, more importantly, it gives you a chance to reflect on whatever we're learning, which From what I've seen, people have are really taking it seriously. They're really trying to reflect on it, putting it into practice, and I've seen just incredible responses from different students of the class. Your attendance, regular attendance is appreciated. Punctuality is appreciated. Thank you so much, everyone, for getting here on time today. And regular participation. For those who are local, we'd really prefer if you can be here in person and join us and bless our physical gathering here with your physical presence. But I know that sometimes people are sick or they're traveling or there's things that come up in life that prevents them from coming in person. And that's why we have the online option as well. We did the first class last week on respect and dignity. Today we're continuing that topic. And then the tentative plan is to have two more sessions relating to dignity, and then for the last four classes to talk about temperaments, inshallah. So I'm going to share one homework assignment that somebody submitted. They submitted it early, but I thought it was useful, and inshallah, I'll be reviewing the ones that are submitted, you know, by Sunday for next week, inshallah. And I'll include those. I'll include some excerpts from those in next week's class. So this person says, you know, with regards to taking a karama-based approach in our interactions, this person says that I realized that in my interactions with my family members, I secretly felt that I was more God-fearing conscious than they. We all have our strengths and weaknesses when it comes to practicing our faith, and the goal is just to get a little better each day. But I felt myself something of a martyr that was interacting with two people who, while devout Muslims, ultimately loved this dunya more than any promises for the akhirah. And while that may be true in some areas, I was looking upon them subconsciously with arrogance and thereby was not giving myself any opportunity to grow. So with this newly found humility, I found my interactions with them were sweeter and more positive. I wasn't inwardly rolling my eyes at things that were being shared. I just kept reminding myself that they are creations of God just like I am, and we're all trying to increase our proximity to our Creator. Which is very beautiful. The Islamic concept of tawadu' is a synonym for being aware of one's position with respect to Allah, meaning that whatever I have, it's all from Allah. It's not something of my own, right? So why would I look at myself as better than somebody else? It's not mine. It's God's. It's Him. It's His. So when I'm interacting with somebody else, sure, you know, maybe I've noticed some things about my practice that they're not practicing, or my goals are more lofty or otherworldly than their goals, right? But that doesn't mean that I'm better than him, because whatever I have is from him, right? Furthermore, you know, Allah put me here for a reason, right? So let's say that I have this better, you know, better education or better background, or somehow I've had a deeper understanding. I've been blessed with that, so my goal is not to roll my eyes at them, but rather to see how I can help them, right? And other sort of reflections that I can have when I'm interacting with them. And, you know, just a comment, you know, I think that many of the people who are attending the class, they're doing so because they have a religious inclination. I mean, if they weren't religiously inclined, why would they be taking like an optional course, right? They would be doing something else at this time. So this is a message for all of them and all of us that when it comes to interacting with family members, right, the humble way is the way that's going to win out at the end of the day. Taking an approach of like, okay, no, this is, you know, the kind of the high and mighty approach, like, you know, that religious arrogance, as they say, it usually ends up turning off people, right? Again, it's action speaks louder than words. Akhlaq speaks louder than ibadah. Ibadah speaks loud on its own, of course, has a very powerful effect, but ibadah without akhlaq is something which, you know, creates like a type of like distaste towards the ibadah, right? So, and showing rather than telling. So these are the things that we've been talking about. Okay, so from the last class, you know, we've been talking about this concept of karama, that every human being has an innate dignity that God created them with. And we know that that dignity is what really can keep somebody in check and really allow them to achieve the goal for which they've been created when they realize that. When we're working with individuals, in particular children, right, they might be in a certain stage of their life where they're not displaying that full dignity that God gave them. Okay? My child, for example, might go through a stage where they're rebellious, or they're angry, or they're jealous, or they're lying sometimes. You know, they go through these stages. So they're not at that place where they ought to be. Now, my goal as a parent is to realize that, okay, however they're acting right now, right, I know that God created them to be up here and to go even beyond that. So the way I treat them is up here. Like, the respect I give them is like up here. And I'm trying to pull them up in that way. But I give them that dignity as if they're over here, even if they're acting like they're down here. Right? And when I take that approach of having that respect that's due to them because of who they are, and I'm treating them like this is up here, this is a way of pulling them up right here. Okay, that's really the summary. I was thinking about how can I summarize like this discussion, and from a philosophical perspective. Because somebody might say, well, no, my child's acting like down here. They're lying, they're cheating, they're teasing, they're pulling hair, they're doing all this stuff, right? Why don't I treat them like the way they're acting? No, I have to. This is where my ma'rifah comes in. I know that Allah created them to be over here and beyond, so I need to treat them with that respect of where they are. And that's the way of them actually becoming that. We talked about four ways of acknowledging the karama of our children last time. How we call them, and how we call to them, and when we call to them. When we call to them, do we call them anytime we want, or are we taking into account what they're doing? The second one was saying salam. The third one was when we make requests of them. There's a lot there about how we make the requests, and whether we do it indirectly or directly, and then how we respond to the requests. We talked about that it doesn't mean that respecting the karama of a child doesn't mean we have to give in to everything that they want. But even when I'm going to refuse, I need to make sure I do so with respecting their dignity. And when I'm going to accept and I'm going to fulfill their request, I have to do that with dignity as well. Now, our topic for today is avoiding disrespect in order to maintain the karama of our children. We talk about four ways of showing respect. And then now we're going to talk about three ways of avoiding disrespect. Now, I just want to make a point here that, I've noticed that there are some new people who are attending the class online especially, and and maybe even in person. I just wanted to, make sure that everyone knows what we're trying to do. Like, there's a lot of advice out there about parenting, like tons. Right? Tons of books. Every year there's like bestsellers that are in this, because it's a need, right? Parents are always like looking for best practices. What we're trying to do is to go back to the principles that we find in the Quran and the teachings of the Ahlul Bayt alayhim as-salam. And we're trying to build off of those. Now, in some cases, the advice that's being given, it matches with what's being presented, let's say, by different, psychologists who work with children. And that's okay. That's okay. You can arrive at a certain conclusion through different paths. But we're hoping that because these are grounded on the teachings of the Quran, the Ahlul Bayt alayhim as-salam, that they'll be the most effective. And they work as part of that whole system, that parenting becomes actually an act which is part of our development as parents in terms of our journey to Allah Ta'ala. Okay, so that's really the focus. And one of the main sources I'm drawing upon in these classes are the books of one of the great scholars in this area. His name is Ustad Abbasi Waladi. Okay, so what we're talking about here is that the first way of avoiding disrespect is by being careful about the words that we use. Okay, so I want to quote this tradition from Imam Al-Baqir alayhi salam, where he says that the weapon of undignified people is ugly speech. Okay, now just ponder a bit about this tradition right here. Okay, why does the Imam alayhi salam use the word weapon as opposed to just saying that undignified people use ugly speech? Right, what does it signify to use the word weapon? Any comments? There's a microphone here and there's a microphone there, so we have two microphones this time. Just Just turn around from the bottom. From the bottom, just press. Yeah, okay. Anybody? Okay, you can use this microphone here. This one's easy to use. Just press that.
So I think what I understand from this hadith is that, like, what I get is that when people, for example, they curse or they say bad words to people, it kind of is degrading in a way, because those words have, I guess, if the person allows that to have power over them, it makes them feel a certain way, and it can be really demeaning. Because when you're talking to someone and it comes off and you're cussing at someone, it just comes off as really hateful, and you feel this sense of, like, I don't know, shame. So I guess that is the power and that is the weapon.
Okay, so thank you. So sisters, Aliyah is talking about the effect of ugly speech, right? Is that it can wound somebody like a weapon wounds them, okay? And that's definitely one aspect. But we can take it further than that, right? That ugly speech is really like, it's like you're taking a weapon. When you take a weapon, either when you're on the offense or you're on the defense, right? And you're wielding this thing here, and you are now either seeking to hurt people or you're using this as your defense tactic, right? And the Imam alayhi salam says that if you wanted to choose a weapon in these cases, right, then only an undignified person would go after ugly speech, right? There's better ways. If you want to be on the offensive or you want to be on the defense, there's a better technique that you can use, okay? So we'll get back to that. Now, let's talk a little bit about this ayah that Brother Mahdi so beautifully recited at the beginning. Unfortunately, the microphone wasn't working at that time. But here in this ayah, Allah Ta'ala commands the believer, says, وَلَا تَنَابَزُوا بِالْأَلْقَابِ. Do not insult one another by calling nicknames. Right? Now, what does this mean, like, on a practical level? Right? What is the ayah actually talking about when it says, how evil are profane names subsequent to faith? So according to Tafsir al-Mizan, Allama Tawatwa, he gives three different interpretations for this ayah. And, you know, he says that all three of them, and there's no problem in all three of them applying here. That number one, don't call a believer by a profane name or an adjective. Okay, naming, labeling, using adjectives, right? When you're describing, when you say a name, you give a name to somebody, you're basically saying, this is who you are, right? This is part of your identity. So don't do that. Number two is, don't brand a believer with a profane nickname. And there's a difference between the first and the second one. There's one time when somebody is just, you know, somebody's like lazy, or they're ugly, or they're like really sharp-tongued. There's another time where it becomes like a nickname. Like that's the, I don't know, people have nicknames, whatever, you know. Like, for example, he's the knife. Why is he the knife? Because he's so sharp, right? Like he's, you know, or, you know. And then the third one, don't give your child a profane name. Okay, and, you know, if we think back to all the, you know, recommendation and emphasis we have in Islam about choosing the right name for a child, right, what is the reason for that, right? Because somebody might say that, oh, it's just a word, right? It's a unique identifier, right? It's kind of like, you know, you have QR codes for that are unique for everything. So I just picked a QR code for my child here, right? There's a lot more to it than that. There is a type of tarbiyah that happens just in the name that I've chosen and I then call my child with, right? That's one of the ways I can help for that karama to be developed in them. So now imagine now that somebody does the opposite of that. They actually, they name their child a beautiful name, but now they start calling them names. Like, you're this, you're a slowpoke, you're dumb, right? You're this, right? So now that whole, all that philosophy that was there in place for like choosing that really good name, that person's actually going against that very philosophy by using these labels and using these adjectives and these names. Okay, there was a man named Ghawi bin Zalim in Islamic history. Ghawi is like, in this case, a synonym for Zulm. So basically, Zalim ibn Zalim. the oppressor, the son of the oppressor, or the wrongdoer, the son of the wrongdoer. And when the prophet met him, so what he did is he went to one of the idols, like I think Suwa, one of the idols at the time, that was near the Kaaba, and he was just like, I don't know, he did something. Like, I don't know, he broke it, or he like kind of, he did something to insult the idol worshippers, and then he kind of repudiated that idol worship, and he became a Muslim. So when he met our prophet, the prophet asked him, like, what's your name? He says, Ghawi ibn Zalim. So right on the spot, so prophet says, I know, your name is Rashid ibn Abdi Rabbihi. Rashid meaning the one who is rightly guided, the son of the servant of his Lord. Okay? There's a lot of tarbiyah there that's going on. Right? The prophet wanted, obviously, the prophet is respecting the identity of this person. The name that we're given, we have a lot of attachment to it. Right? But when the name is something which actually can bring somebody down, the prophet says that no, you can't use that name. Right? And this has a huge impact when it comes to, like, you know, let's say the names that we might call our children or the adjectives we might use for them when we're dealing with them. Okay? Now, there's a saying, I looked it up, it's from 1872, about sticks and stones may break my bones, but names will never harm me. You've heard this before, right? Is that true? Right? It's not from any biblical source or, let's say, a religious source or anything like that. It's just a saying, right? And there's no trace of it before 1872. It's just somebody who came up with something that kind of rhymed, and they said, let me put this and publish this, right? And it's something that we learned when we were kids, like as a way of dealing with like bullying or teasing or something. You know, words aren't going to hurt you. But actually they do, right? And as I've been talking about right here, that it has a tarbiyah impact, the names that we choose, the labels that we use, the adjectives, so much so that the prophet was like, no, right here on the spot, I'm going to change your name. You're not supposed to be called Ghawi or Zalim. Okay? And it's interesting, in the biblical canon, there's in one of the books, there's actually the opposite of that, which is the blow of a whip raises a welt, but a blow of the tongue crushes the bones. Okay, which basically exactly the opposite of what this other is saying here. Words do matter. Names do matter. Okay, let's look at a scenario. My husband has a very short temper. He tells our kids that they don't study enough and that they're stupid. My daughter calls him names in retaliation, and then they yell at each other. Okay, now, somebody might think that this is so far-fetched. This would never happen in a Muslim household, right? It does, okay? And even worse than this, right? And when parents get, you know, they get tired, you know, they get frustrated, right? And they had a long work day, there's a lot of pressure, right? Things happen like this. That's where we have, so those of you who are thinking that there's no way I would ever, we have some people who don't have children yet. They're like, why would I ever do that type of thing? You know, children are to be loved and cherished and whatnot. You know, some of you might have a baby and you're like, how could I ever imagine calling a baby like this stupid, right? It actually does happen. So any thoughts here? Like, what's your analysis of what's taking place here? What are the messages being conveyed and how are they being processed? There's a microphone there and there's a microphone over there. Asmina.
There's actually a lot of things happening in this paragraph. I would say one thing is that's happening is that the father is the emotionally abusing these kids. He's calling them names. He's saying negative things about them that eventually they'll start to believe themselves. The more that he says them, the more that they're going to believe it. And it becomes kind of like a cycle where their behavior is because of what he's saying, and it doesn't end. And another thing I would say is that he's teaching his kids how to be disrespectful. They don't know what it means to be like, because they are calling that he's being like abusive to them. They're kind of trying to defend themselves, and trying to like yell, because the only way they know how is by yelling and calling him names, because that's what they're learning from their father. And so this like whole, there's a lot of like disrespect going on from both sides. So there's no respect for the child or the parent.
Thank you so much. And then what do you think, how is the father going to deal with the daughter calling him names?
I don't know. To an extreme, be like being physically abusive.
Yeah, I mean, it keeps on going up and up and up, right? And then there'll be other techniques like shaming or whatever, you know, yelling maybe profane language or whatever. It's like this thing that keeps on going, right? So there's no hope, and this is just ending in, like, it's not going anywhere, right? It's making things a lot worse. When the father is not treating the child with dignity, right? There's no way he's going to be able to teach the child how to treat somebody else with dignity, right? So this is something you got to remember. Think long term, right? That long term, I want my child to know how to treat people with karama, right? So I need to be putting that into practice, okay? So the problem here, as Sister identifies, it really lies with the father. Number one, why does he have a short temper? Right? What does that mean? Like, who does that? Who does that and says that, okay, well, because of my own shortcomings, right, I'm going to take them out on somebody else. But sometimes people, like, you know, it's kind of like this thing that, like, in this home or in this family, it's known that this person, they have a short temper. Everyone walks really timidly around them. Why should that be the case, that somebody has to be feared by other people? And, you know, other people have to be like the, you know, sort of the punching bag for them. That's very, like, you know, a lame excuse. The father should be, like, addressing his problem, identifying what are the roots of his short temper, and working on them, right? There are techniques. There's, God helps those who want to fix themselves. And one of the, if you noticed in last week's spiritual reminder and in this week's, I think both of them mentioned this idea of being patient and not being angry unnecessarily. Like, these are things which are really, really foundational and important in relationships. Okay, now sometimes it's in the form of labeling. So you hear this all the time from parents, like, he's too shy, right? Like, for example, like, you have a young kid and maybe, you know, a friend will come, like an adult friend will come, and the adult friend will say salam to the young kid. And then the parent will be like, oh, he's too shy. He doesn't like to talk to strangers. Okay. Or, you know, she's a bossy type, right? So let's say that you want to have a play date and then you tell your friend that, oh, she's a bossy type, or she's a leader, or he's a natural born artist. Okay. She always cries. He is a picky eater, right? She's such a drama queen. Right, he's so selfish. Let's look at a couple of these. So let's say, for example, that you have a young child, like maybe 5 years old, and you proudly tell your friends, your daughter's 5 years old, you probably tell your friends that, oh, my daughter is just a born leader. Okay, and she hears you say that. Why could that be something which is problematic for that child? Okay. Okay. Can you just say that?
Yeah, because it might put undue pressure on her. I mean, she might not be ready for that.
Exactly, right? Like, a child wants, you know, is exploring, right? They're growing. They're going through different experiences. They're processing different things. And once she gets boxed into, like, a certain thing that this is the way you're supposed to be, right, then it becomes very difficult. You know, it's like this conflict. My mom said proudly in that one time that I'm a leader. Here, I don't feel like being a leader. I'm not comfortable in this situation. Right, what do I do? Right? Now, let's say that the mother noticed that her daughter was taking a lead in, let's say, playing with, you know, other younger children, and she wanted to compliment her on that. Rather than saying that, oh, you're such a leader, she could have complimented her on what she did. Right? You know, I thought it was great. It was awesome with the way that you played with those kids younger than you. Like, mashallah, good job, right? So you're complimenting on the action rather than labeling them with that particular thing, okay? If you want to choose a label, then choose a label which is comprehensive, like an abd of Allah or something like that, you know? But not something where it's like boxing them in a certain thing. Also, we have to remember that children have developmental stages. And what we see in the first 7 years might drastically change in the next 7 years. And that might also significantly change in the third 7 years. This is, you know, according to, like, you know, Islamic theory of child development and many others, right? Children do change. And so there might be a child who is, in their first 5 years, they're very talkative, very outgoing, and then suddenly there's a shift because their temperament is actually a colder temperament. That's okay. It's fine for them to be more of an introvert, right? It's not like something has gone wrong. But if they're boxed into that, then that can become an issue. Okay, let's look at this one. She's such a drama queen. You hear about this, like, especially with girls, right? That, oh, she's such a drama queen. My daughter is, you know, like this. She's a drama queen. And she hears that. Why is that potentially an issue? Brothers? Anybody? Oh, yes. Okay.
So something I could, you know, as a girl myself, I feel like if I heard that, I would just feel like my parent is complaining about me. And they think, oh, I'm just being drama. Like, I'm just always having, like, I'm nagging without, like, asking, like, you know, if I'm okay or how am I feeling, you know. Just, I guess, yeah, I, like the sister said, I feel invalidated for, like, that feeling. And especially as, like, a young girl, you're going through so much. You know, like, in school and, like, family and just having your parents say that to you, that makes you feel more, like, oh, I'm going to be more dramatic because you said that.
Yeah. Yeah, thank you. I mean, it's actually, for a child to be, like, expressive about their feelings is a blessing, right? Now, they might be overly, they might be overly, like, let's say, sensitive, right, to things. But to tell them, to label them as, oh, therefore you're a drama queen is not the right approach to tarbiyah, right? We need to, like, you know, teach them and guide them about how to process their emotions, you know, in a certain way, how to let things go, right, how to remain calm and whatnot. But this is actually a call out for help, right? And like sister said, they need to be validated. Like, no, you're good. You're good, but let's try to work on, you know, processing these emotions in a better way. Or, like, he's so selfish. So here, when a child is told from the parents that they're selfish, right? Again, it's like that name. Then it has a tarbiyah effect on them. They actually might become selfish because of that, right? It's almost like writing their destiny for them, right? We don't want to do that for our children. That's why, remember, think not Ghawi, right? Like Rashid, right? So we want to always be thinking about Rushd and development for our children. Okay, what is meant by distasteful language? So anything that you wouldn't say to someone you respect. Okay, so if I want to think about that, let's say that I have somebody who is older. Would I use the same type of labels or names with them? And or anything that you wouldn't say to someone who respects you. Right? So maybe right now my child, you know, is not at that stage where they respect me, or they don't outwardly respect me. You know, because children, again, children have different temperaments. Sometimes they show their love, they show their respect. Other times, right, it's rare that they do that, but that doesn't mean that it's not going to come. It will come, right? But let's say right now it's a particular low, right? I'm not getting that respect from my children. Doesn't mean that I can now use distasteful language with them. Now, why should this be avoided? Number one, it gives a weapon of the undignified, according to the hadith, to children. Right? We don't hand weapons to our children. We don't do that, right? Because they're not supposed to have weapons. They're not too young for that, right? So, why do I want to give them a weapon, right? I want to give them a feather. So I don't want to teach them these things that can really harm other people. I need to think about it. And I'm basically telling them that because I'm using it, you go ahead and use it. Whenever you're unhappy with anyone, just let it out. Call them whatever you want. Use whatever words. Number two, it makes the parent into an undignified person in front of the child. Why? Because the child now sees that their parent can do things which are undignified, right? It's a weapon of the undignified. Now they know intuitively my parent has now fallen into the category of the undignified, because dignity is something that we can sense through our fitrah, our God-given innate knowledge. And it breaks the sanctity of the home, right? Before, the home had this environment where we don't stoop to that level, and now the parents have broken that level. Number four, it lowers the bar of what is allowed at home. Number five, it distances the parents from the children, okay? Because now, you know, the child, again, good names are being used, and now suddenly bad names. It leads to the shaming of the child, loss of karama. We have to remember the parents are the most important people who can affirm the karama, the dignity of a child. And number seven, it can be remembered by a child for a lifetime and become their inner voice. You are stupid. You are a loser. You are, like, you know, no good. You're not as good as your siblings. You're this, you're this, you're this. Okay. Now, the second, so that was the first one. The second one we talk about is making fun of them. Now, you know, when it comes to making fun of children, one question that I wanted to pose is why is it easier generally for adults to make fun of children than it is to make fun of adults? Why do you think that's the case? Okay, just if you can use the microphone for the people online. Okay, so they look at children as kind of a lower in the status, and so they say that, okay, well, therefore they don't have as much rights as somebody else would. Okay, that's one perspective. Okay, what else? There's another reason as well. Yes, if you can just use that microphone. Yes. Exactly. So children don't necessarily have evolved or developed mechanisms of response, right? And so they might just take it in, right? They're laughing. Maybe the child's also laughing as well, and they don't think the children understand. Now, that's a mistake, right? Just because a child can't show the reaction that an adult would doesn't mean that they're not feeling that same reaction, right? Because being, you know, like not given that respect is something which is very, like, you know, intuitive, okay? And the second question is, what is the difference between having fun and making fun? This is something that I just want you to think about, that because, you know, it's one of the blessings of God that children are easy to have fun with. They're fun-loving and they're fun-seeking. And so we have that. And adults, you know, who are good at this, they can get really into it. But sometimes we hear complaints from, like, let's say one of the spouses, and they're like, well, my spouse is really good at having fun, but sometimes it goes too much, right? And my children end up even, let's say, crying because of it. Right? So this is where the boundaries aren't being observed. And it can easily go from one to another. But I think if we think about it, we know where is it that we're having fun and where are we with them and where are we having fun at their expense, right? Where their personality and their character is now being, like, kind of looked down upon. Okay, I'm going to give some examples of that. Yeah.
Since I had heard some parents doing this, I was heard the response that I'm trying to teach kids sarcasm because they need to man up and they're going to face bullying and all that.
Yeah.
So we're just having fun and trying to teach them.
Right.
But yeah, I don't think that's how it goes.
Yeah. Yeah. So sometimes, like, parents have this habit, right, of doing it because they see the child as being weak and vulnerable, not having the defense mechanism, and they want to, it's like this, like, sort of, like, thing they have to get out of their system. So then, and then they come up with these justifications, like, I need to teach them. No, that's not how you teach a child about dealing with sarcasm, by using it on them. No, you know, no, there's other ways. Of course, there's sarcasm that can be used in a tasteful way without doing riba, without, like, insulting, without teasing and whatnot. And of course, that's something which is good to teach a child, like, that you can be witty in the way you use words, but that's something separate from this. But thanks for that. Okay, so the making fun, what do we mean by making fun of a child? So laughing down at them, imitating them, okay? Sometimes imitation is done and it's just playful, but sometimes it's done where it's actually, like, you know, inside of it, there's a type of making fun of them, teasing them, embarrassing them in front of others. Right? This comes up sometimes unknowingly, where parents are talking about things that they shouldn't, or that the child doesn't want them to share with other people. Right? Now, sometimes the child is being unreasonable about it, whatever it is, but sometimes, no, the child really, like, this is sensitive for them. Sometimes it's private information with relatives or others. Right? Things that would actually be classified as ghiba. Ghiba, it doesn't matter if a person is a child or they're an adult. Ghiba is ghiba. So somebody can do ghiba of, like, let's say, for example, they're talking about something really, I don't know, like the toilet training process of their toddler, and they're sharing things which are embarrassing about their toddler. Well, why are they doing that, right? Just because it's, let's say, the grandma, doesn't mean that there's no ghiba rules when it comes to the grandma, Right? The grandma is still, you know, a believer. I mean, like this is, let's say it's, the rules of ghibah is that if it's something which is considered like a flaw or like something not a good thing, a fault or a flaw that I know about somebody and I go and I disclose that to somebody who was unaware of it, right? Why? Well, that's ghibah, right? So this private information thing comes up sometimes, again, with relatives, we feel like, oh, we can say anything, right? Or even deliberately scaring them. Right, this is a way of making fun of them. I'll share with you a story from my childhood. Okay, so for some reason, you know, I grew up in the Midwest, and for some reason, when I was a kid, I used to be scared of squirrels. Okay, I don't know why, but I was scared of squirrels. I'm not scared of squirrels anymore, alhamdulillah. Okay, but there was a person in the community, like one of the like the uncles, like kind of who. He somehow knew that I was scared of squirrels. So when we would have like these gatherings, like social gatherings, right? He would yell out, squirrel, right? And then I would get really scared. Right? And they would have a laugh at my expense. Like, okay, this kid is getting scared. You know, like, haha, you know, type of thing, right? And, you know, God bless him. I mean, he met it in good, he wasn't like, he's not a mean person or anything like that. But I was scared, right? Now, what was the point of this whole experience with the squirrel? Like, I'm over the squirrel thing, but I don't know what kind of damage it caused. Like, maybe... I could have been something else. Anyway, no, I don't know. But anyway, I'm just saying that like that type of thing, sometimes people do that. Okay, so here's a scenario. Zaid is 8 years old and he loves pistachio ice cream. At a big family gathering, he reaches towards the pistachio ice cream, but his hand is too short. His uncle is about to push it towards him, but Zaid's father winks at him to tell him not to do anything. Zaid is forced to ask for it and he says, can I have the pistachio ice cream? So he says it kind of in a funny way. Everyone at the dinner table erupts in laughter. Okay, any comments? What's wrong with this? So. Let's say he was like 3 years old, right? What about at that time? What do you guys think? Yeah, exactly. So when he's 4 years, 3 years old, it's just a cute thing, right? It's just cute, and it's very different, right? Like now the child is 8 years old, right? Right. It's they're not like that type of like, you know, child who's like, and their child who's now developing emotion, sensitivity, right? And again, they might not show and react in a way like an adult would react, but they still are, you know, capable of being really hurt by this type of being made fun of at their expense. Okay. The last one that I want to cover this evening is harsh scolding, reprimand, and rebuking for mistakes that they make. Okay, if you guys think about when you were children, right? How, in terms of like, percent, in terms of discipline techniques, okay, how often were you scolded for things that you did by your parents? Just show of some, were you scolded often or not often? Like, what is it, a common thing? Kind of, sort of, okay. Like, I feel like it's one of those things where, you know, especially, you know, in older generations, it was a very common technique, right? Where somebody, a child does something that the parent doesn't like, and the parent responds with a fit of, like, emotion, right? That kind of lashes out at the child, right? They get angry, they shout, they yell, they tell them off, right? And they give them a good telling off, right? And the thinking is what? That the more I do this, I really make them like kind of feel the blow of like this type of emotion and passion and energy, then next time they'll think twice before they do this thing. Okay? Now, the question is that what really is happening to the child? Is this a valid tarbiyah technique according to Islamic teachings? We have a hadith from Amir al-Mu'minin, he says, do not be one who often scolds and reprimands. For doing so bequeaths ill will and calls the one who is reprimanded towards enmity. Okay? So if this technique is being used frequently, right, the Imam al-Islam says this is the type of effect that it's going to have. Another thing we have from Imam al-Islam is he says the most noble characteristic of the noble one is his frequently looking over that which is aware. What I mean by looking over here, maybe I could have translated a bit better. Looking over meaning that looking past. Let me change that actually. Looking past. Mean that he's not, you're kind of ignoring it. Okay? So what does that mean? That let's say that my child does something wrong, right? Part of being a dignified, noble person and treating myself, you know, being having someone karama myself and dealing with somebody who has karama, is I have to selectively choose when I'm going to even react. I notice it. I'm aware of what's happening, but I don't necessarily always react to it. Sometimes I'm just going to let it pass by because it's not beneficial for me. This was just a one-time thing. It's not going to repeat. It was just, you know, a thing that happened, and I don't need to point out all the mistakes and really scold them for that. Okay. Let's look at an example. Zakiya is in fourth grade and brings back her math test paper. She received a mark of 65%. Her mother tells her, "Zakiya, that's terrible. How could you do so badly?" Her father adds in, "What, do you plan on flipping burgers for a career? Like, how could you do this? Like, you know, what's wrong with you?" Right? Now, here, she got a 65%, and the result of that is she getting scolded. Right? What could the parents step back, if they were to think about it and they were to step back? Let's say they get this result. They see that the daughter gets this result. What could they do at that point that would be a better approach? Sorry, Brother Hassam, yeah? Okay. Okay, so the first of all, you're saying that they can... Okay, so asking what happened. Okay, that's a good start. Okay, yes, sister? Just make sure the microphone's on.
I think that when she probably saw her own grade, she felt demotivated. And then with the reaction from her parents, then it's like they don't have faith in her, maybe.
Okay.
For the future. So she probably needs motivation,
okay,
or encouragement and support.
Okay. Could you pass it back to stream? Thank you, sister.
I'm just wondering about, like, okay, so she got 65% on her test, but I think that the parents should be looking at their own selves. Like, oh, what did we do that, like, did not help? What did we do that we didn't help her to do better? Like, she's in fourth grade, so I feel like fourth grade, you still need to be, you know, helping them stay on top of their homework, helping them, you know, study and all that stuff. But it's like, I feel like parents should be more like, that this is a collaborative thing. It's not just Zakiya. It's also all of them together. This is a reflective of everyone's actions, and they should work together to try to solve the problem rather than just putting all the blame on her and making her feel so badly.
Thank you. Excellent. Yes, Brother Hassam, could you pass the microphone back to Brother Bassam and Ayat? Thank you. Go ahead.
Well, I mean, it's kind of indicative of what we just talked about in the prior slide. This is definitely a scenario where you don't want to be scolding the child. And that's obviously going kind of feeding off of what everyone else has said, that the child's already kind of not happy with the result that they got, and then insult to injury.
Okay, thank you so much. These are really good points. Do you want to add something? Sure. See, thank you so much. I mean, at the end of the day, yeah. Oh, okay, okay. Sorry, we didn't know that. sorry to those online. We didn't know that the brother's microphone isn't connected. So what the brother commented on, there's a few different, actually there's a lot of comments from the brothers. I don't think I can do justice to all the things that they said. My apologies for that. But in the interest of time, I just want to move on. The 65% from an educational perspective, right? Who said that that's bad, first of all, right? Like, it's just a number, right? And like, for this child, it actually might be wonderful, right? Maybe they were at 50 and now they got to 65, right? So we need to acknowledge where they are and we need to help them have this mindset of growth mindset. Okay, this is where we are. We always were trying to get achieve like higher and higher. And maybe relative to the class, like God didn't give them those natural computational abilities. That doesn't mean that they're somehow inferior. So this is about the karama, right? Dignity means that I don't measure somebody based on their math scores. And unfortunately, the educational system doesn't have that same outlook. Our whole society doesn't have that same outlook because it's sometimes these quite silly measures, really, which then allows somebody to go to the top universities, and then it's all these prestige and status, whereas status and dignity lies in something else. So, as parents, we often repeat these same, like, tired myths, right, of what dignity and status is, and we need to be very careful about this. Now, there could, like brothers were saying, that we need to look at what is the root cause of this. Maybe the parents aren't giving enough support. They're not having a team effort for this. Maybe the teacher isn't conveying the things properly. Maybe the child actually just needs some help in test taking. There's so many, maybe they need some special accommodation. There's so many things, right? But to scold somebody that's not their own fault is something which is really to be avoided. And this is the main thing. Is it their own, is it deliberate? Okay, every time Malik plays video games, his father starts getting annoyed. He often scolds him severely about playing too much video games and how it's going to affect him in the long term. Rather than things getting better, it's now getting worse. Malik often plays behind his father's back when he's not supposed to. Just in the interest of time, I'll just make a comment on this that, you know, of course, playing video games can be harmful, and playing too many video games is even more harmful. But if the father's going to take the approach of scolding, right, every time he gets agitated when his son is playing, every time, and his son is always feeling like guilty, then doing the guilt trip approach and the scolding approach isn't addressing the main issue, right? The child needs to be educated. What are the harms of video games? The child needs to be told that this is what the limits are. And when the child is playing those video games, let's say they decide that, okay, this is okay, then the child shouldn't be made to be feel shameful for doing it, because now if it's okay, then it's okay then. Right? In fact, the father maybe should play with him so that, you know, he can actually make sure what's going on there, right? So this approach, it now is resulting in Malik, like, you know, basically rebelling and things getting worse. Okay, I actually have another commitment, and I'm sorry about the time, and I know I'm gonna respect your time as well too. So we're gonna end at this point here. Just to sum up, we talked about three actions to avoid: using distasteful language, making fun of the child, harsh scolding, reprimand, and rebuking them for mistakes that they make. Inshallah, we'll finish this up next time and then go on to the next topic. Thank you very much. Wa sallallahu ala Muhammad wa alayhi tahirin.
Something which is, it's not like he's permanently.